Okay, before we begin the show, I want to make an announcement. This September, a new book being co-published by Magic Hour Press and JNL Books will be coming out. It's called Ordinary Things Will Be Signs for Us, and it's made up of Caritas, formerly known as Sister Caritas, photographs. She's mainly known for her colorful graphic serigraphs, but she also left behind thousands of 35mm color slides shot in the 1960s. Over the past year and a half, Jason Fulford, Julie Ault, and I have been sifting through them and can't wait for you to see what we've been up to. It's been a pretty incredible experience getting to work with them, and I hope one thing that the book communicates is the total excitement that we had in seeing those slides for the first time and getting a glimpse into this world, which is just so rich and inspiring. The book was brilliantly designed and produced by Jason Fulford, and you can have a peek at it at magichourphoto.org/books and at jnlbooks.org. If you pre-order it now, we'll send you a copy in mid-August, wrapped in signed and stamped printer sheets from Verona, Italy, where we printed the book. Also, look out for events in New York and LA this fall. We'll let you know more about them as we get closer. I'm Jordan Weitzman, and you're listening to Magic Hour. Sean D. Henry Smith is my guest on the show today. Born in Brooklyn, raised in Miami, and now living in Amsterdam, Smith's practice uses and blends a mix of photography, poetry, and performance, engaging in Black experimentalism and collaborative practices. They received awards and fellowships from the Fulbright Program, the Poetry Project, and Poets House, and have read and performed and exhibited at Basilica Soundscape, the Brooklyn Museum, the Studio Museum in Harlem, and at 47 Canal. In 2020, their first monograph, a collection of photos and poems called Wild Peach, was published by Future Poem. We got together on a hot summer morning just before Sean was headed to 47 Canal to install a show, which is currently up at the gallery. If you're in New York, be sure to check it out. Hope you enjoy the conversation. I asked them about a radio show they had on Montez Radio a little while back, which I was curious about. I noticed that, but I've never heard the show.
Yeah, it was right around the time that my book Wild Peach was coming out, and the invitation was kind of to like either read from the book and maybe share references and that sort of thing. And I kind of was like, oh, actually, I want to like put all of like the voices in my head like into a space, like a lot of like just recordings of friends, you know. Sometimes I'm like with poets and I'm like, hey, like read me a poem, and I like put my phone down and or Zoom recorder or whatever I have with me.
It's interesting. I mean, I find that as I don't know, even as photographers, like these, you're constantly gathering, collecting the, you know, images and things, mm-hmm. just in daily life. I mean, if you work that way, I guess.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But sound is such an evocative thing, and mm-hmm. Getting a sense of someone's personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sense of like pause and like cadence and I don't know. There's just so much information in all of that. I think that's also what like I love with poetry, is that's what's happening on the page. It's sort of this guide to like one's tempo and rhythm, and it's, I don't know, fascinating to like read something and then like go to a reading and hear it and be like, whoa, yes, like your voice in my head was doing the same thing, or me reading this aloud, the line breaks, the space between words are like instructing me to like hold this space. And I think there's that relationship to photographs.
How do you make that? I'm curious about what you were just saying about making poetry in relation to photos.
I'm failing to remember like a direct quote, but I'm thinking of the way that like Maya Deren, there's all this writing where she's like, oh, like, you know, photographers should like work without tripods and like really like extend themselves, like extend their bodies into the image they're making. Like what we have is our bodies, and that's what makes the image we make unique. And so it kind of feels like that.
Yeah, no, so it's more like, so it's more in the making rather than looking.
Oh, that's funny, because I think of them as the same. Like, I think...
Making and looking?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Even if I don't end up making an exposure, like, the process of looking feels like it's gathering information, you know, like, and maybe that materializes in other, like, later or in another way. Like, maybe it's something that I end up writing.
When we decided we'd get together, I was thinking back on when we first met each other last year.
Mm-hmm.
We got together in Washington Square Park to play a game of backgammon. And I remember it was this beautiful summer afternoon, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
But I remember in that encounter, I really wanted to take a picture of you. I really wanted to make a portrait, but I didn't, because we just met each other. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to just pull out my camera. I don't know if this ever happens with you, but this happens with me. And then there's a bit of regret, because I have the image in my head maybe, or like I have the memory, but I almost wish that I had the photo.
Mm. That's one of the questions, I think, of the work that's like being installed today.
Yeah.
You know, just that arrangement of images are all kind of like revisitations in some way or another. Like they're the photograph after the... Oh, I should have made the picture last time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
Almost all of them are.
Really?
Yeah.
Like revisiting the thing.
Yeah, like you know, for instance, there's one... I found this, like, park behind a golf course, behind a hospital, and I was just on this, like, long bike ride, you know, still in Amsterdam city limits, but in the Bijlmer area, so it's, like, it gets closer and closer to, like, farmland, and I'm biking through this and eventually end up in this park, and you know, it's like 9:30 and the sun is sort of like just now starting to set, and there's this like wet t-shirt on some pines, like just kind of hanging on a lower branch just over a canal, like it's just through the like a gap in the bridge that I'm looking at this shirt from, and I don't have my camera. And like the light is just falling perfectly, and I'm just kind of like, I have to get back here tomorrow at this time. And so I like essentially like redo this whole bike ride, because I also couldn't figure out exactly how I got there. And I couldn't quite like, you know, pinpoint it on the map. It was, you know, and so I redo this whole thing and like get there almost exactly at the same time the next day. This time with the camera, and as you know, like I, and fortunately the shirt was still there. Fortunately the sun was still setting. You know, fortunately the conditions allowed me to almost have the picture I wanted yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can do it. Sometimes you can go back and find the thing, and sometimes the thing wouldn't appeal to you as it would appeal to you in a different way. I mean, the light changes.
Something
changes. I mean, it's weird how the cues that you have to make something, whatever might inspire you to play with the situation and make something out of it.
Or like in unique to that moment. That is always like it's such an immediate negotiation. Mm-hmm. Like I mean, I'm thinking about it also in relationship to photographing people I don't know, and which I find that I've done less and less over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have, it's been that there's been almost an invitation. It's been that. On the other person's behalf, you know, it's like, I might already have the camera out and someone's like, what is that? You know, like, who are you? And,
and
it invites a dialogue, and maybe I was already interested, but their interest in what I'm doing becomes like the event of the photograph.
Right.
And yeah, sometimes with people I'm meeting or even with people I already know who I'm wanting to make an image of, it kind of just actually, you know, we were in our dialogue and we were also in our game. And I think like somehow like those took precedent.
But there's, I guess you're, it's like when there's a, when there's some kind of complicity, but you know, it's funny because I feel ambivalent about this feeling. And that's almost why I wanted to bring it up, because I feel that on the one hand, I feel the same way, that there is, you need to feel this kind of, have the, a person's permission, or when you have that person's permission, then you have this capacity to play within the situation. But, you know, I have this other memory of being with, I was in a bar. Mm-hmm. I was printing a book in Venice, and I was in a bar late at night with Gus Powell, mm-hmm. and a friend of his who he introduced us to. And we were sitting there. As we were sitting and talking, you know, Gus had his Leica, you know, slung around his shoulder. And I kept on seeing him. I kept on looking over and noticing him fidgeting with the camera. Almost if you'd ever, like, he was doing it in a way that, like, I could tell he wanted to take a picture. And he was itching to take a picture. And I was wondering, like, in these seconds and minutes, like, if and when he was going to take his camera and pull it to his eye. And lo and behold, he did. And I was so, I don't know if the word is impressed, or I don't know if it was a jealousy, but, like, I was, I thought that was good. You know, mm-hmm. this is a good impulse for a photographer to, like, you have this itch mm-hmm. that I think if you were a photographer, you do, I don't know, yeah. you have one where you to actually respond to it and mm-hmm. just pick up the camera and do it, even though it might feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And this is also for me where, like, poetry and photography overlap. But it's, you know, and again, just like another quote that I'm failing to remember the fullness of, but, you know, Yusuf Kamenyaka has, just like in an interview, he's kind of talking about, like, the bravery it requires to be a poet or mm-hmm. be an artist, and that, like, you have to reveal yourself, you know, like, you have to, like, like, be an ugly thought sometime, and mm-hmm. like and yeah, just the, like, the nerve that requires you know, and also just because I guess maybe that's always the next step, is kind of like I think sometimes the jump to already be editing is actually what might withhold me from making an image. It's like, well, okay, yes, this picture, yes, this moment, yes, this line. But what happens when it exists in public? Well, you know, what happens later? Like, what relationship does this instance have to me in a like extended sense of being?
Thinking about that in the moment of making?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's also like, I think, you know, maybe even what we were saying earlier about the camera being kind of instrument, but, you know, like, the, it requires a sense of improvisation, you know, that there's, or like just response to what is happening and, like, the music of the moment, you know, it's like, this is my solo, or this is how I, like, complete the chord or challenge the chord. Is the camera, like, encouraging, like, yeah, more movement, or is it actually a hindrance? And then I think that's actually the negotiation that I'm trying to make. You know, is it furthering the conversation, or actually does it, like, disrupt the moment?
So I have a question. When you were just talking about that photo mm-hmm. that you discovered on your bike trip, on your bike ride, that you went back and then you were able to make something out of mm-hmm. it. Are there situations where you'll see something and then not take it, or not be able to take it, and then not be able to recapture it? Like, do you have photo regrets?
It kind of happened last night, where two friends from Amsterdam who now live in LA mm-hmm. and were in New York for the weekend with their daughter. You know, we had dinner and then we were just kind of hanging out under an awning while it was raining, and their daughter kept, like, opening the, like, fridge outside that just had a bunch of juices or whatever, and just this, like, you know, like, bluish light was just washing over her, and I, like, took out the camera and I was really trying to find this moment, and then it just got busy all of a sudden. Like, there was just, the moment, like, disappeared from me, and I, like, couldn't really tell her to, you know, she's three, I couldn't, like, tell her to, like, go back to the fridge, or ask everyone to move, or, you know, like, it just, the moment really just kind of, like, evaporated from me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I think of it as regret. And I think also I might try to, like, hold that for another kind of intervention. You know, like, maybe I, can kind of plan this in another way. I do tend to photograph what I'm seeing in real time. Like I yeah, I guess that is also connected to this Maya Deren thing of like just, yeah, wanting to not really interfere with what's happening. And if I am, then it's kind of just to highlight what's happening. Like it's like, oh, well, the chair is this way, but the light is falling this way. If we just turn the chair, you know, like, but not trying to like reconstruct the whole apartment, you know, or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, I remember reading this story that Saul Leiter told to Jason Fulford, going to meet him. I guess it was a little bit before he passed away. And I think Jason was photographing his Saul's apartment for Aperture. Mm-hmm. And Jason was in there and he was sort of rummaging around a bit. And he started to move a little stack of books. And Saul came up behind him and said, "No, you can't move. You can't move a damn thing. You gotta shoot through it."
Yeah.
And like that was his yeah. credo. That was his rule. And yeah. then, you know, of course, you have that in your head and you look at a Saul Leiter picture. Totally makes sense. Yeah, you know, he's yeah. always shooting through things. I relate that also. I mean, this idea, yeah, you always wanting to shift things around and.
Yeah. But it, yeah, it also just like makes. It makes more work, you know, like, it, yeah. but yeah. And it's, yeah, I think usually the thing is that I'm trying to respond to, what is immediate. The Saul and Jason story made me think of, you know, I think it was summer 2017. I, was in London and I, met with Liz Johnson Artur and, she was preparing for the show in Toronto. It was like a sort of a big like retrospective kind of thing. There was a prize and she was just sorting through like 30 years of prints and they're like all kinds of kept and unkept, you know, like some of them are like, you know, in proper sleeves and boxes and so on. And some of them are just like, you know, they're tests of things. There's things that she's, yeah, she's just rummaging through. And so like, constantly we were rearranging the space and I you know, there might be moments where photographs would happen and I was like, okay, like I'm just working with the like this pile that we've made now or and how she was dealing with it or and so yeah, it's just like the choreography of like how we were in her studio together yeah, and wanting to like honor that.
How did you meet her?
I messaged her on Facebook. You know, yeah. I was just like, hi, I'm like in London for the summer. I guess her book had come out maybe it was two winters before, but I just kind of stumbled on a copy and was really kind of obsessing with this book. And you know, the book ends with like these ellipses. You know, and like it, you know, it's like dot dot dot. Like I, you know, I had an impulse, and so I had to find it. You know, I had to go out and find it. I had to make these pictures. It's like this urgency, and then the ellipses that kind of like decorate the urgency. And she messages with that same.
Like, she uses a lot of ellipses.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
So do I.
Really.
Me and my brother do, and it's people are always commenting on it, and. Yeah, I don't know why. I just always use them too.
Yeah, like just fully inside of spaces. Like
I'm very interested in people who do it also.
I love the trailing off that it visually represents also, but it then bridges back into something else. It, you know, it feels like a fade out. You know, and whereas like maybe just a period sometimes feels like, you know, nail in coffin. Like it's like this is it. I think even part of my relationship to poetry is that I like don't use that many periods and I use a lot of commas and it's kind of like it's a pause, it's a reaching into something else. And when I use a period, it feels very much like, and I mean it, you know, like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to use exclamation points at the moment.
Are you?
It's hard.
Use more of them or use less of them?
Use more of them. I think I do in like emails.
In emails, yeah.
But I don't in poetry, and I'm curious about them. Mm-hmm. I did two performances at 47 Canal last winter, and one of them was titled "What Mosses?" Exclamation point. It was such a thrill to like arrive at it. I was like, yes, like I've earned this exclamation point, and mm-hmm. it's in the title, and it's like, you know, and it's throughout the text. Like it's, I was on the Isle of Lewis.
Where's that?
Just off the coast of Scotland, Outer Hebrides, like south of Skye. And on the last night, me and a friend had kind of gone on like a late walk, and it was kind of like up, you know, yeah, up a big hill. And it, I mean, the ground there is so perplexing to me because it's rocky, but it's also super like marshy and mossy and wet. And it's kind of like you can take one very firm step and then the next step is you're like sinking into the ground. And so like, you know, like high boots are like a requirement, you know? And, mm-hmm. And so we're walking and it's quite late, but it's that sort of summer light, and so it's you can still see ahead of you quite well, and then all of a sudden we keep hearing this like whirring kind of like almost like electronic bird sound. I mean, it is ghostly, and we'd also like that it might have been that day or the day before we'd met with someone who was telling us all these like fairy stories and these crazy stories of like, I fell through the earth and like, and, you know, was taken by these fairies or whatever. And so me and this friend were having a moment and then kind of like rushing back. And I don't know, I was just like writing through all of this and yeah, the refrain kind of wet mosses kind of kept, you know, whirring through my head.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. It's a good story. Yeah. I'm Jordan Weitzman, and you're listening to my conversation with Sean D. Henry Smith that we recorded in New York. You can watch a video piece that they made using photographs called Lunar Eclipse, which is available at 47canal.com. Also, head over to magichourphoto.org/books or jnlbooks.org, where you can check out and pre-order Ordinary Things Will Be Signs for Us, our new co-publication with JNL Books, made up of Carita's photos. I mean, after we're done here, you're going to install your show that's opening tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
What are you installing?
I guess that's also part of what I'll figure out today. But you know, there are 10 pictures. There might be fewer on the wall. Mm-hmm. That were made anywhere between like 2020 and now. But I'm like seeing or considering for the first time. Yeah, so some of the photographs are from Wild Peach. And I guess it's thinking through this, like, the middle section of the book is called With You in the Slow Hour, and it's it is a long poem, and it's like meditating on slowness as like a practice or like as an ethic, and then it's like trying to do that formally. So it's doing it like through the way the poem is delivered, but then also like through the way that the photographs in that section are like how they became or what they become. It's a series of questions about like place and my place within it, and maybe a reflection on like who's there with me. Seen and unseen, you know, like it's...
What's the show called?
Relics.
Relics? Are there two titles or that's the joint title?
That's a joint title.
I was just wondering what your relationship to titles are. I'm curious when they come about, mm-hmm. and if they are a pleasure and come easy, or if they're a struggle and they're a stress.
It's... both.
Not that they're mutually exclusive. Yeah,
totally. It's really, I mean, you know, I was talking to my friend Ryan about this earlier because it's happened a few times that we've had to title programs that we've done together. And my impulse is to go to the first one that we like, because it usually just like feels like it captures our excitement about whatever the thing we're doing is. I actually don't find it to be easy. And I guess that is also then the impulse to like hold on to whichever thing starts to feel right most immediately. And yeah, sometimes it's like, this came to me in a dream. And sometimes it's, you know, like a direct reference to something else. There are recently some untitleds and I'm kind of like, I don't know what that means. But even with Wild Peach, like there's, you know, the With You in the Slow Hour is this one long poem, but it's also the section title. And so it's like doing two things at once.
Mm-hmm. How did Wild Peach come about? That was your first monograph?
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it something you'd been working on or?
The Body Text, which is the last section, was its own like chapbook. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2016 and it was maybe originally conceived of as an artist book, but then I was invited to, like, a friend which had just encouraged me to send it to New Delta Review, which is like a poetry press out of Baton Rouge. And that just kind of happened. It felt like it kind of happened because I already had this idea of, you know, I was making these photograms with my hair and then there were these black and white pictures that existed in this body of work, and I was just trying to contextualize them with language, and that language became the poems that became that project. And then I was concurrently making pictures and writing what became With You in the Slow Hour. Yeah, it just came to a point where like this work had amassed over a few years, and I was like, these live together. I just put it together in a portfolio, and Future Poem had an open call, and
It was an open call.
Yeah, and it was selected that year. And
nice.
That's kind of how it just happened.
Okay, so I never write poetry, and I don't feel like I'm a good writer. Mm-hmm. But I imagine to write poetry, you have this infinite control over what you want to see on the page. Like, to me, there's something about having something in your head and being able to reproduce it on the page. There's something that produces a lot of envy in me, mm-hmm. in that ability. Because I feel like with photos, you can't really do that. Or some people can. Right, some people are good at creating something or recreating something or something in their head and making it happen. But I feel that like I totally don't get that ability, and I've never been able to do it. Anything that I've had in my head, the second I try and make the thing, it's usually maybe something else will come out of it that's better or more interesting, but the thing itself is never what gets it's always much worse than in my head. I guess what I'm getting at is if you're making pictures in the world, you're sort of dealing with what's in front of you, and that's what you're responding to. But with drawing or poetry, it almost seems like a counterpoint to that.
Mm.
Do you feel that way at all? Or am I projecting something?
It's funny because even when I just think about like my handwriting, like it took me so long to grow comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there's maybe like the handwriting I wish I had and then what I actually do, like what I, and it's also funny because I don't, yeah, it feels like translation. Like I do feel like there are lines in my head, there are ideas, and you know, and then I like try to write or type, and I really do go back and forth between both. Like over the last few years, I feel like increasingly I've been like writing things by hand and then typing it up. But yeah, I do get bound up. Like it's like I either can't catch up to my hand or. It's like I can see the ellipses, like I can see the sentence fall off, or I can see the like emotion or memory or, you know, like just the picture that I'm like combing through. like just not make it onto the page. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, I guess I have to try again. You know, like it's sometimes it's like scrapping it. Sometimes it's this part of it came out now and this part of it comes out later. Yeah. But it's never like all at once I don't always feel like I'm able to like exact as much control as I like.
It's like the hope. Thing, like, wait, I'm, so like the thing that you're, it's maybe in your head mm-hmm. that's coming out mm-hmm. is, it might be the thing in your head, but it's not necessarily functioning poetically.
Right.
And in order for it to function like formally or do something that interests you, that takes a while to get at.
Yeah. And sometimes it is immediate.
Sometimes it is immediate. Right.
I'm thinking maybe it's because I was just talking about it in this workshop that I was doing with my friend Ryan. But in Nathaniel Mackey's Bass Cathedral, and it's, there's a series of letters where like N is writing to the Angel of Dust about this band, and there's a moment where N, in the midst of this improvisation, recites a line of poetry that arrives in his head, and then he can't complete it. Like he can't continue the line, and then starts to play his horn, and it was like everything gets bound up into that. Like it's, you know, just like the wailing of you know, it's like where like language couldn't continue itself, he like utters it into music. And I think it might be something like that where it's, I just like, you know, I captured, or oh God, I, mm-hmm. I not capture, or maybe because it captures a word I'm like really working against mm-hmm. in myself right now. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I want to hold on to like what makes itself available to hold on to. And then if I like can't get to the next stage, maybe it's just like waiting for it to come or doing, working another way and seeing how it articulates itself that way. Or even what that like moment seems to like articulate to me and maybe what I'm like also really like grounded in my practice is this like, yeah, like, you know, there are maybe the mediums that I'm like wed to formally, historically, and maybe even out of just like, I'm not so bad at this, you know, like there's just like mm-hmm. a natural like affinity toward, and but the kind of like idea of like mastery or singularly like working within a mode feels like it actually like works against what I'm interested in. I mean, all the artists that I've always looked up to have always kind of flipped between modes or might have like training another thing and it becomes another thing. And mm-hmm. I think that that's like also like particular to Black expression. Like there's, you know, I think that's like what someone like Catherine McKittrick is, you know, illustrating that is like, you know, Black experimentalisms, Black like art is rooted in like being able to go from the poem to the horn, you know, and yeah, you know, Roy D. Caraba was a painter first, you know, and I think he was also a writer, you know, and just that sort of like,
yeah, it appeals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. So what does your, I'm curious, what does your practice look like on a day-to-day basis? First of all, you live in Amsterdam, right?
Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in New York. I was born in Brooklyn.
You're born in Brooklyn.
And raised in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
And then I've always kind of been back and forth. But
you've been in Amsterdam for the past few years.
Two and a half, yeah.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
And what brought you there?
I got a Fulbright. I also got into Sandberg Institute. And I did my master's in fine art.
Why did you pick Amsterdam as your Fulbright city?
Couple of things, you know, one was love, but also,
always I mean, a good reason.
Yeah. but Yeah, but that was kind of the loose idea, is that I would meet with publishers and printers, and then, yeah, just all these emails that I had, or people I had connection to, just kind of like, oh, I'd actually just left, or, yeah, the country's locked down, so we'll try again later, and then I got into my studies, and I, yeah, but I'm there now, and I, or still, and the idea is to, like, revisit that part of things. And,
Okay, I have one more question for you. Mm-hmm. You've been playing a lot of backgammon lately?
Not as much as...
You go in phases with it.
Yeah. Well, it's not... Actually, I wouldn't even say that. It's just that my... So, just my immediate backgammon community has, like, left.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Huh. I started in... I guess it was... Yeah, it was, like, Christmas 2019. And, like, really just, like, lovely learning environment. It, you know, it's just, like, Christmas dinner with a bunch of friends and, like... To the beginning of 2020, a friend gets me bored, and then, like, anytime anyone comes over for dinner, I'm like, I'm going to teach her to play backgammon. And, like, becomes this thing. All my friends are playing. And then I moved to Amsterdam. And then I slowly am able to, like, get back into this thing of meeting people who play or teaching people. And then, like, everyone, you know, we finish school, and then half of those people leave. And so it just hasn't been, like, as fluid. No, I do have... Yeah, like a couple, and I do play like online or whatever, but it's not the same as like.
It's not the same, but my boyfriend and I, we've been in different cities, and we have like this backgammon app. Sometimes he'll like send me like an invite to a game, like, "Hey, want to play?"
And yeah, then, yeah.
And we'll sort of play a game before bed or something, or a few games, and somehow it stays just as competitive. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's also not to say I don't like to win.
No, of course. Yeah.
But we're, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I feel less good about that. I mean, you whipped me last time.
Did I? I don't even remember.
I think you did. I remember. I'm be like, oh, like, I lost. I, like, really lost. You know, like, I... yeah.
All right, do we have time for a rematch?
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah? All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
That was my conversation with Sean D. Henry Smith that we recorded in New York. This episode was produced by me, Jordan Weitzman, and was edited by Aidan McMahon. Original music for the show by Adam Feingold. To browse our archive of interviews, check out our books, and find out more about the show, visit us at magichourphoto.org. Thanks so much for tuning in, and see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.